All right.
Wow. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. We're going Hung for the Holidays okay. with Francesca Hung.
Oh, boy.
Who has been talking some turkey. And I'm stuffed. Okay. This woman who wants to be, what, the governor of Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
hates Thanksgiving. Proudly. Boldly.
Well, she hates all holidays.
Well,
any expression of human joy is itself an element of whiteness.
This socialist wench. I mean, I don't know what to say. She seems like a very joyless person.
Yeah, a miserable. You feel some sympathy for her as a kind of miserable person.
She's a chef, too. She reminds me of the. I didn't even watch the entire movie, but I think you've mentioned before The Menu.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
The Asian
sure.
chef lady in that.
Yeah.
That's what she reminds me of, who's a great actress.
Yeah.
I would say they look alike, but then people will say, you're just saying all Asian women look alike.
And Frances Hall.
No one can tell Asians apart better than I can. All right, we won't get into this. Anyway, socialism, Francesca Hung. Yeah,
she is an unreconstructed wokester.
Yes.
Which I kind of appreciate.
Yes.
So there's certain, it's like, you know, when masks were a big thing,
yes.
right? And everyone was wearing masks.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it and I despised it.
No one knew who I was until I put on the mask.
Who's that? Very good.
Yes.
But now when you see someone wearing a mask, it's either I don't care at all, or maybe I feel a little bit of sympathy for this person who clearly
mm-hmm.
has some sort of neuroses.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a society-wide mm-hmm. thing anymore.
Yeah.
It's
They've been a little bit back lately, but yes.
Well, with the fires maybe, and mm-hmm. you know, we're still in a pandemic. but I feel a little bit of pity for someone
mm-hmm.
who wears a mask. Now, I don't feel threatened by this being something
mm-hmm.
that I'm going to be, you know, drafted into. And that's how I feel about people who are unreconstructed, like woke-tards these days, where it's like there's no political advantage really to being this way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly no personal advantage. You can't enjoy Thanksgiving or 4th of July or Flags Day.
Yeah,
or
what are the other ones she said? She said 4th of July, Halloween.
Okay.
Which I always love when Halloween comes under attack by woke people for being like kind of a cultural appropriation type
Ooh.
Thing.
Like it's literally our culture.
They'll get very like, yeah, you can only, you know, you can be a vampire or a pumpkin. That's it. Like nothing else. That's can't be a character. Can't be a, it's funny.
Yeah. But this
also,
is.
It was and it was culturally appropriated from a variety of like pagan you know, Celtic
yeah.
tradition, right, is the origin of Halloween.
Yeah.
But mixed with Christian All Saints, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's a nice little blend.
Yeah.
Nice little blend.
Yeah.
But we can't enjoy that.
No, we
can't. She can't enjoy that. Yeah, what was her other line that was going around? Because
oh,
she has a...
she has a...
Half-white son. Her husband
son.
Is white. And therefore...
They're not together anymore.
Oh, okay. Her ex-husband.
Baby daddy.
Oh, okay.
No, I think they were married and they're not married.
Okay.
I don't care about
you know.
That.
Yeah.
She's right. She says, I married a... I'm in proximity to whiteness. That's what she says in the interview.
It's clearly a loving mother.
Don't you, man? That is actually the part of woke one that offends me the most, that causes me the most discontentment when the woke liberal, often white ladies, but an Asian lady in this case, starts talking about their theoretical disappointment in their sons who are like two, and being like, I look at him and I love him, but I know one day he will rape me or something.
Yeah,
they just say
mm-hmm.
this awful, hateful, vile shit
mm-hmm.
about their own child because of, yeah, that's, I was really out then.
Yeah.
I can't co-sign that.
No, it's terrible. I prefer my parents to be disappointed in me for normal conservative reasons.
Right. Just the kind of ritualistic professing disappointment in your baby for being born a white male.
Yeah, because of who you chose to procreate with. Yeah.
I did not care for that.
As an Italian, you will not stand for mothers being disappointed in their sons.
No. Mama! Mamma mia. Mamma mia.
Oh, dear.
We Italians love our mothers. And our mothers love us. You wouldn't catch no Italian mother bad. But you could actually, if you do murder or assault someone, your mom goes, what's the big deal?
He's misunderstood.
Yeah,
she had people keep bringing up her old tweets. I'm surprised she hasn't deleted more of them. But she was eating at what's the one fast food chain in Wisconsin? I don't know. I'm not from that area of the globe. But she had to pretend.
Cheese ball.
Yeah, she had to pretend to be sick to get out of there because it was a den of whiteness.
She's going to be in proximity to a lot of whiteness if she becomes the governor of Wisconsin.
Yeah, what's up with...
It's a pretty white place.
It's a very white part of the country, yes. And yet it keeps producing these left-wing radicals, these race radicals.
Yeah.
What's going on up there?
The whole...
This is your neck of the woods.
The Midwest is becoming ground zero for this. Abdul El-Sayed is the... Who's not a... I don't think it's fair to call him an anti-woke. He's not emphasizing woke stuff.
He's done the politically expedient thing and not really talked about like.
He's emphasizing the economic stuff and then the Israel and foreign policy stuff.
Yeah, which is I had a piece on the website earlier. It's interesting because go back to his comments during 2020 when he was the Wayne County Health Director.
Oh yeah.
He was deep into the Kool-Aid then. He was one of these guys who. Was like,
and you don't mean Kool-Aid in terms of a therapeutic for COVID that was probably being recommended by some people.
Yeah,
have you had your daily injection of Kool-Aid?
No. I'm talking about the other mind virus that was sweeping through the country at the time. Yeah, if you recall, there was the COVID lockdowns, and then there was the George Floyd protests, and so you remember it was illegal to be outside,
right?
Unless you were. You know, because for public health reasons, unless you're out there protesting racial injustice in the very concept of policing,
COVID is not
well because that's
contagious.
That's not at a left wing protest, or rather, that is in a, not only was it not contagious, as he said explicitly, the protests are a public health intervention themselves.
Right.
Because structural racism actually is increasing the death toll of COVID.
Yes. And is solved by protesting.
Yes.
In the way that antibiotics treat diseases.
Yeah,
protesting
exactly.
treats the disease of racism.
And we know this because there was
science.
These massive protests and science determined that this was the correct thing to do and criticizing it was a tantamount to criticizing science,
right.
Something that obviously shouldn't involve any criticism whatsoever.
Right.
Should
be killed for doing.
These protests happened and now we live in a, not a post-racial utopia, but... a utopia where everyone is cognizant of their own inherent racism.
Yeah, I think
and,
we're...
There's been no backlash whatsoever.
I was saying to my brother yesterday that we're in like a post-racial, by which I mean things are just a little bit more racial than I ever remember them being. So good job, guys. Whatever you did didn't work. I was thinking on the just we won't go down a whole COVID tangent, but I was listening to some of that contempt hearing for Fauci today, where they voted they voted to hold Fauci in contempt and do so, even though he has a pardon and I don't justice. They're referring him for prosecution to the Justice Department. The Justice Department probably is going to look at this and say, well, what do you want us to do as a pardon and not do anything? But Rand Paul said some. Amusing things because he said that if Democrats were saying this is a political inquiry and we would be very interested in getting to the bottom of all this, but this is a witch hunt. And Rand Paul was like, if you want to review the documents that we've compiled, they're password protected, and no one on the Democratic side has requested the password to view them.
Yeah.
So I can literally tell that no one has done the reading for this.
Right,
that was pretty good.
Nice.
But then you had Ron Johnson, right? Actually, Wisconsin?
Yeah,
yeah.
He is.
Speaking of Wisconsin, and
that
he
guy.
Was he did start going on a if we'd known about how great ivermectin was the whole time, he loves ivermectin. He's a big ivermectin guy.
Has it every morning? Yeah. he is a verified crazy person.
Call me. A Fauci stan. I know I'm gonna have to be unmasked with my Fauci candles and my. In this house, we love we
say unmasked?
Love science, et cetera, but I'm not believing it.
I think ivermectin generally turned out to not be super effective.
It kills. There's that interesting study, right? Slate Star Codex review that does find that because there's a lot of parasitic worm infections in other part of the parts of the country. And if you do have a parts of the world, and if you do have a parasitic worm infection and you also get COVID, you'll be very sick, because it just having a worm compromises your immune system. So just treating people with like ivermectin who have COVID, some of them do actually have, they don't know about it, parasitic worms, and it cures that infection. So you will, like, there is in the data a little bit of an improvement in COVID outcomes, but mostly from studies conducted in like Bangladesh. So it's like, and it's not harmful, and it might be incidentally helping you, but it's also not just like treating it stops you from getting COVID is not any evidence of that.
Ron Johnson too has kind of gone down the road of believing all conspiracy theories too. He was on a few months ago, he was on Brett Weinstein's podcast talking about 9/11, which, you know, obviously we still haven't really gotten to the bottom of that.
We'll never know.
He had some line where he's like, you know, they built the Twin Towers to withstand jet plane crashes. What are you talking about? It's obviously all skyscrapers need to withstand jet plane crashes. So.
Yeah, Brett Weinstein, myth. He's raised some good points about some things over the years, but just can't help himself from engaging in a little bit of they killed Charlie Kirk type stuff.
I'm not saying they did, but they're certainly making it look like that's what happened.
And then the response to that is, well, you're making it look like that
now. You were doing that thing.
Engaging in this. I don't know how much more obvious it can be that the person they apprehended is the one who did it when his fingerprints are on the gun that was definitively used to do the killing, and he also wrote messages to his transgender lover explaining what he was going to do and why. And he's on the security tapes that his parents recognized, which is why they turned him in and are testifying against him.
Counterpoint. Counterpoint. It's all horseshit.
I don't know.
I believe that with all my heart. He says.
Yeah, but then why are they presenting the evidence in this compelling way? Because they're not confident in their own case, because the government, it's just, you can't win with these people.
Yeah, Brett Weinstein is one of these guys where it is just it is one of those things that kind of makes you feel like you are, in fact, living in a simulation, right? Because you remember his initial appearance onto the scene was as the,
when a bunch of, like, woke terrorists were wandering Evergreen College, demanding that he come out and face justice so they could beat him to death with a baseball bat, which was pretty insane. Man, those people over, that was...
Yeah, and so that's, he becomes the, I'm the lefty professor speaking out against the woke excesses.
Speaking out against crazy people.
Right.
Just kids who were, like, totally high on their own momentary fleeting amount of power, because that was a time where leaders of universities were afraid to challenge radical students and just were doing their bidding in, like, absolutely humiliating ways. Whipping themselves down. This was the faith militant was in charge, right? This is the period where of Game of Thrones, where the church has control, the High Sparrow and the powerful people don't know what to do. Like, that was the moment of that on college campuses.
Right. Yeah, there is kind of like a French revolutionary aspect of it, where, like, the people in power start using all the radical language of their day and then realize that, like, the world identifies them as the oppressor. They're like, wait, what? No, I was the good guy.
Anyway, they all got blown up in the green fire, like in Game of Thrones, and now the wokes aren't in charge of anything anymore.
No, but the people who offered some reasonable criticism of woke excesses have themselves gone insane.
Because they need a new thing.
They need a new thing.
It's not enough to just be against woke.
Is that what it is? Addiction to attention and audience capture?
Yeah.
Or?
I mean, we kind of, to a large degree, won the war on woke.
Yeah.
So you need a new crusade. But there's still a couple people like Francesca Hong who fit the woke one mindset.
Do you think it's going to come back? I mean, clearly a lot of these people who... you know, Abdul Al-Sayed, he's a good example of someone who kind of used that language and then has abandoned it for other, you know, mm-hmm. more contemporary lefty concerns. But is it something that'll rise again? What do you think?
I mean, they'll all do DEI still to the extent they legally can. They just won't talk about it.
Yeah.
Gone will be public pronouncements of fealty to wokeness.
Yeah.
It'll just be happening still behind the scenes. Like, universally, like, okay, yeah, we're not going to admit people based on race. Welcome in, everyone with a first name that sounds a little diverse.
Yeah.
They'll still do it, but they're not going to, you won't have, you know, it's not enough to be non-racist, yet whatever the quote is.
Right.
Kind of public.
You have to be actively anti-racist.
Right.
Yeah.
Now they'll just be quietly annoying.
Yeah, right.
I think. That would be my guess. I think, you know, corporations, little bit of platitudes about wokeness, and then
dialed that back. Hey,
they've dialed that back because it's a big market loser.
Interest rates are a little too high right now. Like, oh shoot, we actually have to grind out a profit here.
As I was saying, you have Abdul El-Sayed now winning in Michigan, so we're going to get an actual test now. He beat the centrist in a statewide race. It was very close.
It was, yeah.
Very close. He's up against a legitimate Republican challenger in a state Trump won narrowly, but it's purple state. And we'll see if he can win. And if he wins, man, the DSA-type people, even though I know he's not explicitly part of them, but he's aligned with them.
He's part of that world.
He's,
I mean, what does it mean?
World.
It's like an Oppenheimer where he was, I never officially joined the Communist Party. I just, all my friends are communists. And
right,
I believe
and the
in
woman
communism
I was banging on the side was a communist. And
I ran cover for communist spies.
Right,
and, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's campaigning with Hassan Piker. Well, who thinks that's a good idea? Can I ask you that?
I have been railing against Hassan Piker constantly because he's just so obviously nuts and bad.
He's a loathsome individual, but I'm just curious, like, surely, like, electoral self-preservation would get you to not ally with this guy?
I mean,
he seems like nothing but a liability.
I was arguing about this with Lindsay, who, on Rising, who, in fairness... No, in unfairness. I don't think she brought up examples that were... She was trying to come up with examples on the other side. She was like, well, a KKK grand wizard endorsed Trump. And I'm like, well, that's different than... Abdul Al-Sayed, like, affirmatively chose Hassan Piker to be at his campaign and speak on his behalf.
Yeah.
Like, there's no Republican has done that with Nick Fuentes.
Yeah.
And then... Lindsay was like, Trump had dinner with him, but Trump had dinner with Kanye West, and Kanye West brought Nick Fuentes along, and Trump didn't know who Nick Fuentes was.
Yeah.
That doesn't, like, I'm not doing, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon style cancellation.
Yeah.
But just like, if you choose this person to speak on your behalf, then you have to bear some responsibility for the fact that
they
dressed up Mao uniform, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I would say that is fair. Yeah.
Also, Nick Fuentes, like, is in favor of Democrats now or whatever. I don't even know that Trump needs to. Gavin Newsom needs to renounce that support if that's your rule here.
He's gone down the Richard Spencer.
Richard Spencer renounced his white nationalist views and just became a moderate Democrat.
Yeah.
So, what else do you want? I don't know.
Right, yeah.
He says, I don't hold those views anymore. They were wrong and bad and, you know.
So this is the test case of a DSA, whether it can survive
outside of
New York. Yeah.
And they will be so annoying if they do win, which is reason enough to oppose him for that seat, because they will just be like, you know, kneel down.
Right.
The establishment must bend their knees to us, that kind of...
Right.
Because every time they even had, like, fleeting, slight success... Bernie wins a primary. Bow down to us, establishment!
How dare you
Hillary's
going to
demolish him, but... It's rigged against... Fine, it's rigged against you. I'm not even going to argue that's not the case.
Yeah.
The establishment hates them, they hate the establishment.
I'm sorry the Democratic Party was trying to win an election.
Yeah, the Democratic Party is... I mean, they're going through this reckoning right now. This is a litmus test issue. the DSA is on the right side of this litmus test issue, so they're going to win everything.
Yeah, they really got nothing. the big issues within the party are incredibly divisive. Israel stuff. They're always fighting about how much socialism and healthcare we need. That was the gist of the piece I wrote earlier this week. Was the last time that they could all join hands was COVID. They need another pandemic to bring everyone back on board, right? Because everyone, making fun of Saeed for talking like this, but everyone talked like that at the time, right? Gretchen Whitmer, I went back and looked at her statements around the George Floyd protests, and she was like, "Yes, these are very important, and make sure to social distance when you're out there protesting and writing." But yeah,
I didn't see much social distancing at the BLM protest. The one in front of that nice church building that they treated
set on fire
totally
St. John's,
respectfully, yeah. And oh, that's right, they set it on fire and put graffiti all over it.
Yeah, that was an interesting case of kind of people who should be opposed to lawlessness siding with the mob, because the pastor of that church, Episcopal church near the White House, they set it on fire, and then the next day Trump goes out there and does a photo op with his Bible, and he had a very funny line where one of the reporters asked him, "Is that your Bible?" And he's like, "Well, it's a Bible." But then the pastor is like, "How dare he use St. John's as a political, backdrop?" It's like, really? You don't have anything to say about the people who literally set your church on fire?
Yeah.
Strange times. Strange times.
Times we don't like to recall, but we do it frequently.
Yeah, I remember I was out there covering the protests, and there was that group, White Coats for Black Lives, physicians and medical students and nurse practitioners and whoever else. Out there protesting racism, which is the real public health menace.
Some wet nurses.
Yeah, sure. I didn't realize this. I'm reading this book about the French Revolution. I guess an early kind of liberal crusade was against the wet nurses and in favor of breastfeeding.
Oh.
Yeah. Which Simon Sharma, both because the wet nurses was unhealthy. They were trying to nurse 10 babies at once, and there's only got so much juice in the tank. But he's also Rousseau was he's a big fan of this, and he's he was also a sexual deviant who liked this for weird sex reasons. So.
He like a homelander, wanted to drink the breast milk type thing.
He was a masochist of some kind. I haven't read any of his novels, but he was a weirdo for a lot of reasons. I can't remember where I was going with that, but
So breast milk, delicious. Yeah.
You tell me you've never tried it?
The forbidden fruit.
There was that group of White Coats Against Black Lives, and at the protest, and they were like, "Okay, we're gonna, march over here now." And they're like, "Everyone, social distance." And I got a big laugh from the crowd because, of course, they're not social distancing. Yeah. It's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit.
Yeah. So I don't know. Is there any other things about this primary that we should?
It was just interesting watching my college town. I'm from the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. I went to the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and the mayor just got taken out in a primary, and he was Ann Arbor's very left place. Mm-hmm. He's a very progressive mayor. I remember interviewing him for a city council because I was on the Michigan Daily's editorial pages, and we did endorsements and interviews of city council candidates. Mm. This guy, deeply progressive person, he just got wiped out in a primary by a DSA type.
What was the complaint? That he didn't want to wipe Israel off the face of the map with the municipal budget of Ann Arbor?
Exactly. He probably didn't say he would arrest Netanyahu on site if he happened to set foot in Ann Arbor.
Get with the times.
I know. So if somebody like that goes, man, they're just doing a whole... The Democratic primary voters, I'm mad and I'm voting for against the incumbent. I'm voting for the craziest son of a bitch in the room.
Yeah.
And the person with the most maximally extreme anti-Israel position.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess you can imagine.
Seems bad.
You can imagine two trajectories from this, right? Which is that this is ultimately self-defeating. You succeed in pushing your own party to the left, but so far to the left that it's beyond the point of electability, and Republicans win, right?
Also, of course, the incumbent was a YIMBY, and the guy who won.
Okay.
No housing ever to be built.
No, because it would be built by people who make a buck.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And it would, And then it would be, you know, tall buildings would cast shadows over the on the
on stolen land. Right? Yeah.
Right. We can't build on stolen land, so we can't build anything new.
The shadow shades you know, the OGB.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you can imagine that trajectory, or you can imagine the trajectory where everyone hates everyone right now, and the parties are so...
I know.
Oh, definitely. But we've always hated everyone.
Yeah.
But the parties are so polarized that you actually can kind of afford to be crazy left-wing ideologues because...
What are you going to do, vote for a Republican?
Who is also crazy. Yeah. Right, yeah. There's no middle ground to capture anymore, so you might as well go full radical. Yeah.
No.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, middle ground. So Tucker Carlson did a speech last night. He's meeting with Marjorie Taylor Greene and those people
about... You know she's on Cameo now?
Oh, what is that?
That's where you pay, you know, you can like hire a celebrity to like have a birthday message.
So your
birthday's coming up, so I could get you a Marjorie Graham saying happy birthday, Robbie.
Well, yeah, that'd be cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we know Marjorie. I could get her to say happy birthday to me without you paying for it, probably.
Well,
so save your money.
Shit.
Because that's what you got me. I didn't know that. Well, anyway, they're talking about, you know, vague third party musings, some kind of challenge. Right. You can't do that because it doesn't work. There are already two third parties, so I don't know why you would start one instead of just like...
Taking over the Libertarian Party
Or the Green Party or whatever you think fits your... They're on the ballot in many states. They're also... Libertarian Party is incredibly vulnerable to...
Take over,
right? I'm not trying to slam our friends in the Libertarian Party, but it's gone through...
Work.
Right. That Mises caucus takeover, and now those people are out of power... And I think it's a little bit hollowed out, right? They weren't even on the ballot. They weren't on the ballot in D.C.
No, yeah, the party went through kind of a civil war.
It lost a lot of
ballot access,
and like the American Civil War, totally, lots of deaths on both sides,
truly regrettable conflict. Yeah.
Very regrettable, and an act of aggression by one side. Which side.
I'll let you read the historical record.
Yeah.
But
we'll let you see what certain people have to say about that and about which monuments should exist or not. But it's just totally ambiguous what we're saying.
Yeah.
So doing that, now they could, I don't know, he could run, if Tucker Carlson ran as an independent candidate, he would, yes, shave off some small amount of vote that would otherwise go to the Republican and probably guarantee that Democrats win. And maybe, and I'm not knocking that at all. I would like to see the parties challenged and punished by little splinter factions more often. I don't think that's it's going to be a big thing because people are just mostly set in the two-party duopoly.
The American two-party system, even though the parties change their own beliefs and whatever else, has been remarkably robust.
Right.
It's almost unprecedented in like a Western democracy, right? To have such two consistent parties.
I mean, what they stand for has changed dramatically.
Yeah,
over time.
Of course.
Has like completely switched.
And that's where third parties often can push the envelope, right? You know, you have the Progressive Party or the Whigs or the Free Soil Party or whatever.
Right. The know-nothings.
Yeah, push one party to basically adopt your views, right? But now that primaries are so open, it makes more sense to just be a pressure group within one of the parties.
I wanted to read you, I guess I didn't write down the exact quote. Tucker was talking a lot about, so obviously he's animated by the foreign policy, but about debt is slavery. Debt enslaves people. He was talking a lot about
usury.
The plight of people in debt, which is kind of a left-wing thing. But I obviously don't like the student loan debt system, and I feel bad for people who have it, but again, that they signed up for it, which is why I'm against doing debt forgiveness, broadly speaking.
Yeah, well, it's bad for the... It's not fair to the taxpayers who underwrote this. And also, like... You know, Brian Kaplan is pretty good on this. He wrote the book The Case Against Education, which, you know, argues systemically against subsidizing college and student loans and whatever else. But even he makes the point that on an individual level, it still, of course, makes sense for you to take on debt and get a college degree and a graduate degree. That will increase your earnings. And so people who have student loan debt, like, again, it's college costs too much because we're subsidizing it.
And if you drop out before you finish, then you just have the debt.
Then that's
very bad. Which is a lot of these people.
Yeah. So it's bad for some folks. Right.
Or if you get a degree in a field that has low job prospects. Yeah.
Right. But for basically,
why is that my fault?
Almost everyone who has taken on student loan debt and then gets a degree is better off for it. Mm-hmm. It's like so much of the affordability discourse. We can get into
burritos. It's number two on the list.
Okay, great. But it's so much the affordability discourse. It's like, yes, this thing costs more than it should, but it's still, you're still benefiting from a pretty, like, the system writ large.
Well, people were, so with the burrito thing, which was a major talking point.
Yeah, why don't you catch up our audience who's probably eating a burrito right now.
That sounds delicious. I usually eat lunch before we start this, but the lunch is sitting on my desk. I'm hangry. I'm lashing out.
Oh, wow. Don't take it out on your co-host.
Fuck you.
I'm on your side.
I can't say that on YouTube. Don't do that.
We'll get to that too.
Bleep me, Cody. Bleep that part of the YouTube. Oh yeah, we will get to euthanasia.
Yeah. After we've done these episodes enough that we should have a supercut of you telling me to
And yet you never take my advice. Here you are.
You're looking out for my best interest. But go on. Okay.
What do I do? Okay.
Catch up people on burritos, the burrito discourse.
Conservatives were talking about that. I think a Turning Point USA person said that they were talking to one of their Turning Point kids who's complaining that the burritos are too expensive at the school. And then someone else was like, well, okay, but if you would in the cafeteria is all, you just pay the price of going to the cafeteria. You don't know what the burritos cost. Yeah. And things get more expensive over time. And in my day, we walked 10 miles in the snow to have a burrito and you didn't see us complaining about it. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, J.D. Vance waded in and said, you're fat.
Yeah,
like that was his contribution to the discourse, was to say to that person, you're fat.
Thanks, J.D. Hopefully that comes up in his next book, that is sincere conversion.
he's trying to be Trump. It's not, it's funny when Trump does it because Trump is funny. It's not funny when other political figures, Republicans, are just gratuitously insulting people. It's not, it doesn't work.
It's a bad look.
Don't try to do it. It's fine when Trump does it. Well, it's not fine, whatever, it's funny, it's engaging, it's content. You can't do it, man. Stop trying. The thing about the burritos, okay. We're all talking about different things.
Mm-hmm.
A burrito costs so much money to young people, not because they're buying it in the cafeteria. I think what they're really complaining about is DoorDash and Uber Eats, which young people use way too much of, as far as I can tell. Yeah. Or people my age, too. I'm including myself in the young people category. Whatever. People under 40. Right. People under 40, which I can count myself in for another 2 years. Someone else prepares your food and delivers you your food, it costs a lot more.
Yeah.
A burrito is not the most complicated thing to make. You buy some rice from the grocery store, you buy some beans, you buy some chicken or whatever, some Mexican spices and a tortilla. You can make burritos for way less than that.
You know, actually, burritos are kind of like a go-to example in my own mind of something that you're probably better off buying at the store because of economies of scale. I mean, if you buy all the ingredients,
you can make a bunch of burritos.
You can make a bunch of burritos, right?
They sell tortillas in 8, 10, or 20 packs.
Right, but the first burrito you make, you go to the store and you spend $40 and you make one burrito and you're like, damn, that took a lot of time and a lot of effort. Why did I do this? Just go to Chipotle, yeah. But that's the other point, is most burritos are not, in fact, $20. Yeah.
You can't. John Levine produced a receipt of a burrito bowl from Chipotle with, like, extra guacamole and some special limited edition whatever, and it was, like, $18 or $19.
In New York.
Or in D.C. or something, yeah. I was able to get it up to that price. But you're right. It's not the common price. And, by the way, this is a do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do. I, too, when I was a younger person of less economic means, opted for convenience instead of financial discipline and would often buy lunch here as an intern at Reason Magazine, making very lowly sums of money 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Did I budget effectively and save myself money on lunch? No, I would go. I love Potbellies. I would go out to Potbellies. I'd buy a shake too every day. Used to have a faster metabolism. I could eat all the junk I wanted and wouldn't gain any weight. Man, I miss that too.
Yeah.
Now I'm older and wiser? I have. What's that?
Wiser.
I am wiser. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot richer.
Mm.
And I make my lunch every day
mm-hmm.
because you just become more disciplined as you age.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I can very well afford to spend $20 or more on lunch every day, I don't want to.
Yeah.
And I make myself a nice little wrap or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or sandwich of some kind or soup every day.
Yeah. I don't know if
every
this,
single day.
I can attest to this.
I eat it at my chair at my I don't even eat it in the kitchen at Reason.
No, I
eat it at my seat across from you. You watch me eat, you watch me chew.
I hear you chew.
You hear me chew.
Yeah, for 10 years
you watch
now,
me vomit it up later. No, I'm kidding.
For 10 Reason, about 10 years, and every single day of that I've watched Robbie eat the
I play Dominion at my little computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been some good times.
Or I watch some people doing speed plays of video games, speed run-throughs.
What could have been a better way to spend a decade?
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know if this makes really economic sense, but I'll say it anyway. I feel like there's something to when you're young and poor, like if you save money on lunch, you're still going to be poor at the end of the week, mm-hmm. so you might as well buy a Potbelly, right? Mm-hmm. And have like, instead of saving $20 to have at the end of the week, you just spend that on a slightly better lunch. Whereas now, I don't know. Again, I don't think it really makes sense, but this is psychologically how I feel about it. It's like now that you like, you actually make money, you're like, oh, maybe I should save more of this. And once you start saving more, you're like, oh, okay, here's more, mm-hmm. Excessive things I can cut out of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true.
That makes sense. I mean, I definitely think, and the problem for Republicans making this argument is they went all in on Bidenflation mm-hmm. and everything costs too much because it's Biden's fault.
Food prices have gone up.
Food prices have gone up. Trump, I mean, I think some of the, like, egg prices are no longer crazy or something.
Yeah, that was more like a bird flu thing.
Whatever. That's a made-up disease, or right? It's sick birds. They didn't get their ivermectin, probably.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Or they took too many COVID shots. Whatever the case may be. Who knows? We'll ask Brett Weinstein about it.
Eggs aren't gay.
I'm not saying Israel gave the birds flu, but
it's weird that it looks like they did.
And you, when you ask the question of whether they did, you get yelled at by people who just happen to want to defend Israel.
Can't believe that. Yeah.
Very weird.
Tack you through all their shell corporations.
Just weird. Yeah. I'm just saying.
That's the yoke we got to throw off, Israel.
The yoke. Eggs.
Yeah, very good.
Yolks, eggs. We can afford them now, but things are too pricey. And Republicans, it's under Trump, so you can't. But now they want to point to everything else, tariffs, war, inflation. All the reasons are correct. Printing fiat currency, all the things libertarians say, that's part of it. Iran's part of it. Tariffs are part of it. Also, things just get more expensive over time.
Yeah,
generally.
Yeah, which shouldn't really be the case,
Yeah.
It's a frustrating issue to tackle because someone says, "Oh, burritos cost too much; they're $20," and then you have to be like, "Well, burritos cost more than they should because of trade wars and actual wars, but they're still not $20, and you can mm-hmm. also save, on the price of a store-bought burrito, you can save some money by, making it at home or not mm-hmm. buying as much, right? That's always a frustrating aspect of the affordability discourse. The funny thing about this being kind of like a conservative struggle is, the one half says, things are too expensive because of the war, even though they all support tariffs. And the other half says, no, the war is justified to make your food cost more. It's the tariffs that are the problem. It's like, okay, both of you guys are just committed to like one right. half of making the burrito more expensive.
Right.
And then under this current administration, we get both. So,
right.
both the war and the trade war are making everything more expensive.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel like it shouldn't be that hard to have a president who is just like broadly committed to consumer prices going down, but they just can't do it. Like Joe Biden explicitly, hiked inflation when he did a big, stimulus bill after the pandemic was winding down. Trump gets in there on this, crusade against high prices, does tariffs, yeah. And
a war on raw materials. He declared war on Iran and on raw materials.
Yeah. Okay. Energy and then everything else yes. is more expensive now, and huh. so of course the burrito is more expensive too. Yeah. It'd be nice if we fought a little about the price of spinach as well. It's a little embarrassing that this is our discourse, I feel like.
Spinach is giving everyone diarrhea.
Yeah, everyone's really relieved. Everyone's really relieved by that. They're like, oh, okay, well, I guess I won't eat spinach.
I eat a lot of spinach. I put spinach in my wraps every day. I eat a lot of salads.
I love...
I grew up eating salads.
I like a salad. I hate spinach and kale. I just cannot stand
really?
It. Yeah, I love... romaine is fine, but that's like, you know, on the lettuce spectrum, from completely mm-hmm. non-nutritious but delicious iceberg lettuce to very nutritious but disgusting tough
kale
and spinach. Romaine's kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. I'll eat a lot of romaine lettuce, but no, I love broccoli. Broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, that's all very nutritious.
It's named after me, Broccoli Rob.
Really?
Have you ever heard of that?
Hmm. No, I didn't know that.
Well, look it up.
I will.
Broccoli's a good one.
Yeah.
I didn't like broccoli as a kid.
Can you look up the type of vegetable that broccoli is? Because I have a fun fact about it, but I can't remember the exact
broccoli,
name.
Broccoli, what type of vegetable? Like legume or something?
It's like
a cruciferous?
Yes. Do you know why it's called a cruciferous?
Because it died for our sins?
Well, very funny. Well, sort of, actually. It's called a cruciferous because it has four leaves. Right? And so four leaves like a cross. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the whole story?
Oh, yeah. That was my fun fact. I only have so many broccoli fun facts. I'm sorry.
Its common relatives are... See, this is what we can just do on our podcast is learn facts about broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
It's
pass that information on to you, the reader.
It's related to cauliflower.
Right.
Brussels sprouts. I like Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts are delicious.
Green beans.
Yeah.
I like green beans.
Green beans are pretty good.
I don't like squash type things that much.
I'm not
a big like zucchini squash.
Yeah, you just got to know how to cook it right, you know?
Can't have asparagus for certain reasons.
The urine smell?
Not just urine.
Hmm.
Yeah, but we'll leave it there.
Okay.
It's no good.
Look, if you're trying to save money and be nutritious, a little bit of broccoli, a little bit of olive oil in the oven for 15 minutes. Boom.
Correct.
Delicious.
Correct.
Super easy.
You won't ever look at a burrito again.
Takes no time filling. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
You'll have like a clockwork orange reaction to burritos from now on.
Yeah. Or you're getting sick.
Yeah, if you have good broccoli.
Right.
Just vegetables and ovens are meant to be together.
Mm-hmm.
Roast those fuckers. Mm-hmm. Put them on a sheet, olive oil. I like a little bit of lemon. And pepper.
A little balsamic vinegar.
If you're feeling... live dangerously.
Fuck it.
We got so many good eating tips for young people.
Yeah. Don't eat the spinach, though. Then you get the other clockwork orange reaction where you're getting sick.
Getting sick all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you DoorDash a lot?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't.
Basically
do
never.
If I have people over, maybe, but other than that... But you don't have a lot of friends, so that probably doesn't apply to you.
No.
Yeah.
My only DoorDashes are like regretful, drunk at 2 a.m, you know, DoorDashes. Mm-hmm. But I've been cutting back on the booze.
You pass out into your own chicken nuggets and you wake up like smeared in ketchup. This did happen to me once. I was like, oh.
Right. It's like, blood? Oh, God. No, no. What have I done? And then
Where's the twink? No, it's my own blood. No, it's ketchup.
Right.
All right, that's fine.
And then you look at the DoorDash receipt and you're like, "What have I done?"
No. No.
Yeah. No, I do not DoorDash.
Yeah. Make your own food. This is the advice I have for young people.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's a labor of love. You know, it's a good way to unwind at the end of a day.
Yeah. It is enjoyable.
Almost no one is too busy to roast some broccoli.
Yeah.
If you're a stock trader or something and you work 80 hours a day, big law. Maybe you don't have time, but
this is all part of a discourse about how difficult young people or young men in particular have it. We're all kind of circling this conversation from different ways. This is really what conservatives, because
you asked me to read a tweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Where is it? Okay. Somebody tweeted, "I'll make young men a deal." Well, I'll say the someone. His name is Will Spencer. I don't know who he is.
This like is some Presbyterian pastor, but like the conservative type of Presbyterian, not the woke Presbyterian.
Cool.
Unlike James Tallarico.
This is the Pelfrico.
Very good.
The exact same deal I offered to BLM. I will concede that the entire system is rigged against you.
Why is that going around offering broad deals to social factions? And that you're systematically oppressed,
but in exchange, you have to agree that we will track every dollar you spend and every 15 minutes of your time for one entire month. Then we'll see who's really oppressing you.
Okay.
Like, if you use your time and money a bit more effectively, you can always do better for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
Would you consent to this? Would you want someone to admit that you're systematically oppressed, and then they'll track how you spend all your time and how you spend all your money?
Yeah, I guess what would be the threshold for getting him to agree that I'm systemically oppressed?
Right.
Like, if I showed him that, you know, I save and whatever else, mm-hmm. and then I'm still paying a 20% premium because of zoning regulations that drive up my rent and inflation that drives up food costs. Mm-hmm. Will he agree, or will he be like, "Well, you still have you just got to save more"? Like, what would be the criteria?
Yeah.
No, I mean, look, there's all sorts of like big issues, macro issues that make things worse. This is why we're libertarians. Pretty big.
I didn't know that.
You ever heard of this? This is a pretty big thing. It's called the government.
Yeah,
I mean, this is part of the libertarian critique.
The federal government.
This is part of. I mean, why are we libertarians? Because we, you know, and have some radical policy solutions. It's because we think the government makes a lot of things worse.
Yes.
Right. That being said, just like helplessness about your own situation is a bad attitude to have.
Blackpilling.
Yeah.
Despair.
You can. Yeah. Despair is a sin. You shouldn't indulge in it. Mm-hmm. You can, in fact, do a lot to make your own circumstances better, and you should.
Mm-hmm.
But so I have mixed feelings on that. If someone is just like a perpetual whiner, then I think that's a good message to hear. But sometimes when it's presented as you have nothing to complain about, everything is fine and perfect, that can also be kind of annoying and unfair as well, because there's big issues that you want to tackle and that, you know, should be addressed through judicious policy reforms.
Yeah.
So,
but you should also pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Yeah, your feet belts. Yeah,
you should. But that doesn't mean it's not all rigged against you at various ways or stacked against, or you just get treated unfairly by people who hate you.
Yeah,
I'm always going on and on about
there's
how everyone is.
There's a conspiracy against you, right?
There's a vast conspiracy to get me, and it's best. World events are best explained through that lens. Like, wow, I can't believe they did this again to Robbie. Start adopting that framework, and it'll start to make sense. I gotta get Brett Weinstein to talk about this.
Yeah, there's a really good book.
Like, there's a terrorist attack somewhere, and it's like, oh, great, now I have to talk about this on all my talk shows.
Thanks a lot. Who's the victim here?
Me.
Yeah, no, this is the conspiracy. No matter how isolated you are from any global event, by having to discuss it, you become a victim by proxy. Yeah, it's terrible.
And I was just thrust into this role. It's not of my own, you know, choosing or volition at all.
Terrible.
I said the last thing on earth I wanted to do was talk more to you, and then our cruel corporate overlords, Catherine, get in that room, cracking that whip. To create more content for us. More!
This is what you want! Look what you're doing to this man!
Oh.
I would recommend everyone read a book called Introduction to the Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Yeah, it's about becoming a more devout Christian.
Mm.
And he has a line in there where it's like, some people, they leave behind a life of sin, and then they go around just complaining about how they don't get to do all the fun sinning activities anymore. He's like, you know what? If Christians were able to find joy in martyrdom, you should be able to have a smile every once in a while. So
that's a good line.
Yeah.
Sin. How great.
Read, for young, disaffected, black-pilled young men out there, you should also read A Tale of Two Cities and study the character of Sidney Carton, someone who is kind of a black-pilled incel and then finds joy and fulfillment by sacrificing himself for his friends. Spoiler alert.
That's a good one. Maybe I'll read that book next. Once I'm done on my latest...
Tale of Two Cities is one of my favorites.
I've never really read it through. I was thinking of revisiting one of my favorite books as a kid. I haven't read it in 20 years, as The Count of Monte Cristo.
You know, I've never read that.
I was thinking of hitting that one next. I have read it. I read it probably in like high school or something. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great movie with Guy Pearce. And,
it's a great movie. Solid.
I would like to... You know what caused it to pop into my head as something I might want to read again?
You DoorDashed a Monte Cristo sandwich?
Monte Cristo? I'm too hungry. That sounds delicious.
Mm.
I don't know how to make my own Monte Cristo. What goes into a Monte Cristo? Is that a roast beef one? No.
I don't know. There's like, I think there's a tomato in it.
You know, we have the way to find this knowledge. What's a Monte Cristo sandwich? I spelled it wrong. A Monte Cristo sandwich is a... I just put in Monte Cristo, and it gave me the book and the cigar. It has how to make it. Oh, my God. Why isn't AI just telling me this immediately? Oh, ham, turkey, Swiss cheese. I can't read this. I'm too hungry. This sounds great. Anyway, Nick Fuentes Hunter Biden brought this up in that joint appearance they did for Andrew Callahan or whatever, Channel 5 guy, who I guess is insane. I never heard him say anything insane, but he was just, again, talking about the they got to Charlie.
Oh, are you serious?
I think so. Maybe he was doing it ironically.
Callahan? Oh, man.
I don't know.
Really?
Maybe it was ironic. I don't know.
Okay.
He's facilitating this conversation between Hunter Biden and Nick Fuentes.
Interesting times.
And Nick Fuentes is saying about, black people have not, I don't want to misquote him exactly. He was saying not so kind things about black people.
Nick Fuentes.
If you can imagine that. And Hunter Biden was like, well, what about... he was praising Western civilization and how that's all white people.
Mm-hmm.
And Hunter Biden said, well, what about the Count of Monte Cristo, which was written by a black or mixed race...
Yeah, Haitian.
Migrant type person. And it's one of the greatest works of in Western literature. Mm. And I was like... Yeah, it is. I feel like reading it again.
Well, okay.
Like, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Hunter Biden. Good book recommendation.
Yeah.
Yeah, Richard Hanania made a point in a recent essay. He's like, black Americans, lower average incomes and everything else than the average American, still make more money than the French. And so what does that tell you about Western civilization?
And I'm all for... defending and promoting the good of Western civilization.
Yeah.
But it is wrong and frankly annoying to reduce Western civilization to white people, which is frankly something woke people have wanted to do. But like, what even is white people? Because to go back to this well, which I go to with some frequency, but I do it because it's useful, Italian and Greek and Irish and Swiss and German and French people who are all like white would not have considered themselves part of the same identity group. They might consider themselves part of Western. They are part of what they're contributing to Western civilization in different ways. But to just say, well, that's just all white people is like so reductive and is what woke was all about doing. Because woke wanted to create this grand narrative of all white people oppressing all other, minorities on Earth. Which is a false way of framing it because there isn't just this one group that's white people and there is relative degrees of privilege and conflict and it's just all more because the individual is what matters.
The individual
mm-hmm. is the most oppressed minority on Earth.
Well, she said big business was the most oppressed minority.
But to give
the wokesters their due a little bit in the American context, because this gets brought up a lot. It's like, Italians used to not be considered white or, Southern Europeans, whatever. The distinction, of course, would be that legally they were classified as white and black people were obviously not. And so depending how far you want to take it, there's this legal distinction between the races then birthed, these discrepancies we see today. There's obviously...
You go to the government... to get racial discrimination into law that you can't get in the marketplace.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Even people who harbored racial resentments themselves wanted to, do business with people of other races, and the government had to come in to stop that. Because...
Plessy v. Ferguson, the Supreme Court case that gave us separate but equal, what was that about? It was about a railroad company that wanted to integrate its railroad carriages.
Yes. Racial resentment is not rewarding in the marketplace if it stops you from engaging in commerce.
Yep.
Right? The market doesn't want you to stop engaging in commerce based on abstractions like the color of your skin.
Right.
So you go to government to enforce that.
Yes. This is why the market erodes racial distinctions.
Yes.
And it's also... why some of the right-wing nonsense about like, DEI is causing the planes to fall out of the sky or whatever. It's like, well, No, the Delta does not want its planes to fall out of the sky. It's not going to hire unqualified
pilots.
Well,
the planes are not falling out of the sky.
Right, also air travel is incredibly safe.
This is they never, fingers crossed, they just really don't crash.
Yeah, I don't know if you read the most recent Helen Andrews essay on race communism.
Oh my God, I'm sure I'm not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, so I mean there was...
Well, is that the one where she was saying that the Soviet Union wasn't that bad?
She said life under the Soviet Union felt normal for most people. Right. Which is a contentious historical point to be made. There was some things I thought were interesting and provocative in her essay.
Yeah. By the way, that's tautological because life under everything feels normal to the people under it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like
the war in Ukraine feels normal to the people in Ukraine now. The normal state is being invaded by Russia and having bombs dropped on you.
Right, that in the middle normal. Of the Civil War, the bombs aren't exploding on your street every single day. You find some normality.
In the most destroyed places, in the middle of the Iraq War, our destruction of Iraq, you could find that cafe's open and they're serving you.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that, put that for one side, I agree with you. But one of the core interesting elements of the essay is you had a system of, you know, racial preference, affirmative action, civil rights, which was designed for a system of 90% white people, 10% black people. And then now whites are increasingly a minority in many parts of the country. And so this system is falling apart. Okay, fair enough. I'm not in favor of racial preferences. The law should be colorblind for sure. But she had some line in there about like the oppression of this race conscious legal system. And she brings up the legitimately a scandal about air traffic controllers, and they're trying to like, you know, do affirmative action to get more black air traffic controllers or minority air traffic controllers. And she suggests, you know, she's like, oh, and this is, you know, probable cause behind the horrible crash near DCA. No, it wasn't. That's the reason that we had a crash is because the
helicopter pilot drove.
Yeah, because the army. Yes. Yeah, the government's helicopter flew into a plane.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They should not have been. They were running a test flight for that because it's a very crowded route at night. It's difficult to see. They shouldn't have done that.
And there's
the person
flew
the helicopter.
There's no evidence that it was because of incompetent air traffic control.
It's not. It was not the air traffic control.
Even that
whatsoever.
Air traffic control, something that I did some reporting on, was suggested was that normally you would have an air traffic controller who would just deal with the helicopter traffic. That's not true. You would never do that because it would actually make air traffic control worse if you have one person talking to one type of vehicle. Right. Then they have to talk to a controller who's talking to another type of vehicle.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's had nothing to do with it. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, this seems broadly, it's a problem with many magazine essays. It's like, oh, this seems broadly convincing. Oh, but then you mentioned something that I actually know a little bit about, and that's bullshit.
Helen Andrews does that all the time. She was talking about how the end of a state-sanctioned affirmative action in college admissions has hurt whites or something like that. And because the only people being admitted are Asians or whatever, I looked at her numbers more closely, and I wrote a whole thing for Reason quibbling with how she characterized the numbers because it was not accurate.
Well, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
man, I hope she's not the next New York Times Ross Douthat type columnist person.
There'd be good columns, but it'd be
enraging to the libs.
Yeah.
Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, well, you're going to be the next columnist there, so.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Did anyone mention that? Was that, you know?
Yeah, well, we already talked about that last week, I guess.
Oh, but we can again.
And you leave behind this podcast? They're not going to let you do Freed Up over the New York Times.
Over my dead body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not, instead of doing Freed Up, you're going to have a new podcast over there called Tied Down, where you got to navigate all these liberal orthodoxies.
I hope if I have proven anything in my long and storied career, I have proven that I can host multiple shows at once. I hope I've done that.
Well, look what it's doing to you.
But the cost to my soul. What else we want to talk about? I know. I went bouldering and I'm really sore. It's like rock climbing type thing, but without like a harness because it's only up so high and there's like pads all over the
ground.
Where'd
you do this?
My brother is a fan of this form of exercise and he's visiting and so he took me to he looked up a rock climbing bouldering gym. Really nice place in kind of by where you, one of the places you, in one of the rat-infested basements you've
called home.
Uh, in like the kind of union state.
Okay, northeast.
Yeah,
Union Market.
Union Market area. That was really nice. Okay. But I've never done this before, and it was hard, and I'm sore everywhere. I think I won't be able to go to the gym for still many days.
Oh dear.
Because I've used muscles I don't like. My shoulder hurts.
Have you caught the bug though? Or are you gonna?
No, I think I would just do it on occasion.
Okay. Yeah, that's something that if you you know, live in California and don't drink, you go bouldering, right?
Yeah, there are real enthusiasts for it.
Yeah. It's a real type of exercise.
Yeah.
Not for me.
It's kind of lib-coated though for some reason. I'm not sure why.
No, it's California.
Just it seemed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it was fun.
Okay.
Fun to do something nice. Different, you know?
What is your favorite type of exercise?
I don't really enjoy exercise for its own sake.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I like to be physically fit and stay young and healthy, but I'm not sure I wouldn't just do it for, it's not really fun. It's, do you just
so
do
if you,
it?
So if you took a pill that would, you know, give you all the benefits of exercise, you would do that and not
absolutely
do the exercise?
Yeah. 100%, without even thinking.
Okay.
I hope something like that someday exists. I enjoy going to the gym because I'm a routine-based person, and part of my routine now is 6 a.m., I wake up, I go to the gym. That is my reading time, is I listen to audiobooks while I do it, so I value that, what I'm able to do, or I listen to maybe a podcast or something, if there's something I gotta listen to. I value having that time put that way, but I don't really enjoy it. I enjoy rollerblading.
Okay.
I used to rollerblade a lot. Mm-hmm. I do it now and then. Mm. I run a lot, and that's my working out my story. You know, I've been working on this novel, trying to get it published. That's where I think up the ideas for it, is while I run/walk. What about you?
When I was better at running, it was definitely going for long jogs.
Yeah.
If you can go run for like an hour, 90 minutes, it just feels great. Similar thing. Yeah, it gives you time to think about the day. I love listening to music, and so that's a great time to listen to, you know, music that gets you going. Now, deadlifts. It feels good to be able to lift a big heavy object off the ground.
It does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you scream in the gym and pound your chest. And it feels very manly. Yeah.
I don't really like playing sports, I would say. I've enjoyed pickleball, and I used to play a lot of racquetball, which is fun, I guess. So I like racket-based sport exertion somewhat. I'm no good at tennis. Pickleball is just tennis, but easier.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some of that.
Yeah. Okay. You know? Very good. Yeah, I was never been a big sports guy.
No.
Not
tossing around the old pigskin.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
No, it's a little too collectivist.
Yes,
you know?
I agree.
Yeah.
I love golf. I golf now and then.
Okay. No, never got into it. No, I like just like some straightforward exercises. Pick heavy things off the ground, put one foot in front of the other, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
When I lived in Arizona briefly, right after my internship at Reason, I did an internship at the Goldwater Institute back in 2010, and I did some like hiking, like serious hiking the kind of mountains in the Phoenix area, the Camelback Mountain and the other ones. That was fun because you get to the top and you have this amazing view, and it's kind of rewarding.
Yeah, when I lived in Vegas, I did a lot of hiking at the Red Rocks there. Hiking is great. Yeah, that's one of the things I like living in D.C. I like living on the East Coast, but that is one thing I miss about the West, is the very easy access to nature. Just like it's just so much
less. I love
less,
mountains.
Yes, I mean the West is beautiful, and it's so much less population density that it's a lot easier to get out into the wilderness by yourself.
Yeah. What else we got? Some fun subjects here.
Yeah, let's give it some fun.
Maybe euthanasia.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Hit me.
Okay,
maybe
yeah.
With some euthanasia.
Yes, so New York has now implemented it's an interesting intersection of law. So New York for a long time has had a law saying that doctors must advise patients about, end-of-life care, their options, right?
And one option is killing yourself.
Well, now it is. I guess it's always been an option, but they passed a law saying that one of the things that you can do now is go get suicide pills to kill yourself if you have a terminal diagnosis or expected to live less than 6 months. And so now that intersects with the existing law saying that, doctors must advise you of your options and then help you access those options, right? And so the combined effect of these two laws is that doctors now must affirmatively explain to people that they have the right to kill themselves and help them procure the drugs to do it. And this law was implemented on the 5th yesterday, and is the subject of a lawsuit by some Catholic hospice orders, nuns, groups of nuns, Carmelites, who run hospice care, end-of-life care, and are now being required by the laws of New York to affirmatively tell their patients in violation of their religious beliefs that they have a right to kill themselves and that they must then help them do this mm-hmm. should they choose to.
Yeah.
So they're suing under First Amendment grounds. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah.
Let's say kill yourself a couple more times.
Just to make sure we get this down as far as possible.
So we're getting a little too famous at this point. Mm. I think it would be a humbling experience for you. In particular, because you're such a boastful, you know, this is a sin,
pride. Oh yeah,
pride, and pride goeth before the fall, and it is almost fall.
Yeah. Oh, this is why I'm not going bouldering. I'm so prideful, I'll just fall.
Well, you can fall while bouldering because there's this, you know, nice mats everywhere and.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, it was inside. It wasn't like actual rocks.
No. It's indoors. It's indoors. Okay. And there's only like 10-ish feet.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. But it's like little courses. Sorry to derail your euthanasia. I don't really have anything to say about it. It sounds bad. They should not have to do that.
Yeah,
the First Amendment is good. Don't.
Well, it's just an example of like something being described as a right. You know, oh, you should have this affirmative freedom to do this thing, but then
it's a requirement on someone else.
The way that lives.
To violate their conscience.
The way that lives implemented is you have to require people to violate their
right. I don't want the nuns to have to pay for abortion pills and all that stuff.
Very good. Okay. We're in agreement.
Yeah. Although that stuff starts, the health, you know, that stuff starts to get a little tricky with us all having to pay for everyone else's health care. Because, like, okay, what if I morally object to your choice to smoke, which is going to give you, you know, raise your health care, and I'm paying for you, I'm forced to pay for, I wish I didn't have to pay for your smoking-related health care costs, but.
Yeah, this is some bullshit, let me tell you.
Okay.
Okay, under a normal free market system, right, I wouldn't be paying for risks other people take.
Right, I'm paying for my own.
Yes, if I'm not a smoker and you're not a smoker, and you're a smoker,
right.
The insurance company is going to come and price us at different policies given
our
relative risks.
I'm a reckless boulderer.
Right. But if the government comes in.
The government?
and says, you have to price everyone's health insurance policies the same.
Yeah.
Well, then, of course, I am paying for your additional risk, right?
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, being a smoker is one of the few things that they can still do price discrimination on. Although you can get out of it by
just saying I'm not a smoker.
Yeah,
every time they ask that question, I'm like, no, never.
Nope.
Never touch this stuff.
Right. Yeah. Right, yeah. So it's like one of these things where it's like the dilemma of who has to pay for what is caused by government intervention in the first place.
Yeah,
so
that government is just no good.
I'm sick of it. I'm sick and tired.
This is why
of
we
it.
Can't. This is why everything is so expensive in the medical field because we don't have good. Price knowledge.
Yeah.
We have price confusion.
All the prices are fake.
Right. The Medicare for all would make
it
worse.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know who's paying for that. Not seniors and their property taxes. That's out.
Right. No, it's going to be a big wealth tax.
Mass wealth confiscation from the wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am curious, you know, because Haley Stevens, she, I guess at one point in her career, endorsed Medicare for all, then backed off it. I am curious, like, what is the Democratic motivation to say you're against Medicare for all? Like, I don't really understand it. Like, why wouldn't you just
do it?
Yeah, just say you'd support free everything for everyone.
Right.
Like, you're almost certainly not going to have the votes to ever do it.
Right.
So why would you, like, not just lie and say that's
what you
do?
I mean, it's getting closer. They want to destroy. Trump wants the filibuster gotten rid of over the SAVE Act.
Great.
Matt Iglesias had made this point the other day in one of his
columns.
He's
like, yes, please
do
it.
Where he was like, I think Democrats should take seriously the idea that the SAVE Act is small potatoes enough that they should say, they should have the filibuster nuked, have this become law. The SAVE Act causes kind of small inconveniences to people to vote, but is not...
It's really not that big of a deal.
It's really not that big a deal. And they should just go, okay, it's not going to hurt... It's not going to benefit one side or the other in terms of elections, really.
Yeah, Jacob Solom had a good piece about about voter ID laws.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically it would require you to
have a passport or a birth certificate.
Or a real ID in order to register to vote.
Yeah.
yeah, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if Democrats want to, like...
They should say, okay, yeah, sounds good. Then there's no filibuster. Democrats take the Senate, and now they can do whatever they want.
Okay, this is what I don't understand about Matt Iglesias. Like, where do you get off, man? Like, you were just, like, a couple weeks ago complaining about how the debt is out of control. What do you think is going to happen once you get rid of the filibuster, and then all these Democrats get in charge and, like, can then actually go past Medicare for All? Okay.
We would have all the worst I mean, the 60-vote threshold is kind of stupid, but it does prevent a lot of bad legislation from becoming law.
And at a time when both parties are bad and stupid.
Right. We're going to buy – if we lowered it to 51, we're going to buy American and hire American and build nothing and love it.
Yeah.
Like, we will build nothing ever.
Yeah.
It will be like the Jones Act, but for every facet of human existence.
Yep.
Let me, you're going to try to walk outside and they're like, isn't there someone you forgot to ask?
Mr. Jones? Senator Jones? Okay, let me ask you this question. Okay, so here's the... I don't think I buy this, but this is a criticism of the filibuster.
Mm.
It may be a more reasonable one. Right now, because no one can do their big swings, right?
No one can do anything.
No one can do anything, in part because of the filibuster. People adopt ridiculous positions that they never have to act on, right? It's kind of like Republicans with abortion for the longest time before Dobbs. Now it's Democrats with Medicare for All. All you have to do is say you support Medicare for All. You'll never have the 60 votes needed to actually pass it, right? If you got rid of the filibuster, then everyone would actually have to be a little bit more honest about the policies that they actually support.
No.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a big no.
Yeah.
That's a take that dumbass take.
I guess the risk would be that they're just incredibly irresponsible.
The stupid legislation that would come out of the Senate if they could actually vote for things, it's not. It would be bad.
Yeah.
It would be so bad, I think.
Yeah.
They'll just do all the dumb things
mm-hmm.
That they only talk about doing.
Yep.
Yeah,
yeah, I agree. I agree.
I think that would be bad. Mm-hmm.
Keep the filibuster.
Probably the better argument is that with Congress so neutered, just the job of doing legislating falls to all other aspects of the federal government, the regulatory agencies themselves, the Supreme Court, and
this would
the president
actually empower
via executive orders.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people who run administrative agencies are pretty crazy themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we could maybe rein them in by having Congress rather than them a little bit more in charge of regulations.
It'd be a little more constitutional.
On the other hand, the Supreme Court is far more disciplined than either group in doing the legislating because that's nine very smart people who are not crazy and reasonable people who make reasonable arguments for the things that they do. So them doing the now the problem with that is they can only do about 2% of the legislating because they can only see so many cases a year.
Mm-hmm.
But the 2% of the legislating that they do is done really well. So, and then there's the president just doing executive orders that is bad.
Bad
no matter who the president is.
Yeah, I think, like, you got rid of the filibuster, like, you would have Congress pass more laws.
Yeah.
But the problem is, like, you know, Justin Amash, he would make this point back in the day when he was still an entity in our politics.
Yes.
About, like, Congress isn't even really the Congress anymore. It's just, like, a small clique of leadership who decides the bills and then just, like, sends it out to the members. There's no real deliberation or representation.
Correct.
Right,
because you can't bring
so
in
you
the
would
House.
Empower,
you can't bring bills to the floor unless the Speaker lets you.
So you would empower this body that is itself already deeply dysfunctional for reasons beyond the filibuster.
Yeah,
yeah. We like right now. You mentioned the Supreme Court. Like a huge theme of Supreme Court rulings is if you want to do that, Congress has to do it.
Yes,
right. That is they're begging Congress to do its job. But the things that they're stopping the executive from doing on its own that Congress could conceivably do are all terrible things.
Right.
The tariffs, birthrights, eliminating birthright citizenship, on and on and on.
Yeah.
They keep saying, well, if Congress wants to do it, you can pass a law. But it would be bad if they passed that law.
Right.
And so we have a little bit right now, a little romance about what a souped up legislature would do, what it constitutionally should be doing. But if it actually were starting to do those things, we would, realize, oh, Congress is also tyrannical and terrible, right? James Madison, he thought it was the most dangerous branch.
A romance, you say. He was a legislator who suddenly had power after the filibuster was taken away. He was a regulatory agent. He did congressman.
Yeah,
something like that.
Very good.
You consuming any other content? Such things.
Let's see here.
What are we watching?
We talked about. Oh, I watched. This might be interesting to you. I watched The Staircase. Friend recommended it to me. It's a miniseries about Michael Peterson. Are you familiar with this case? So Michael Peterson, novelist, early 2000s, his wife is found dead at the bottom of a staircase, and his contention is that she fell. The police's contention is that he beat her up and killed her, or pushed her, or whatever, and he goes to prison. He gets convicted of murdering his wife. Gets some of the evidence thrown out, which then means he qualifies for a retrial, and then does a kind of weird, it's called an Alford plea, where he doesn't admit his guilt, but nevertheless pleads guilty to time served, and so now he's out. So you have schooled me well on this, which is that in true crime, if there is the suggestion that the suspect didn't do it, and there's no other suspect, The guy did it.
Yes.
Almost every true crime documentary, the most, like, the Occam's razor applies. Like, the whole genre is set up to get you to doubt Occam's razor.
Yes.
When you should believe Occam's razor and the person who was convicted did it, right?
Yeah.
Unless there's someone else.
There's another suspect.
That's very plausible.
Yes.
Right? And you can look at some actual malfeasance from the police.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
For sure. This is a little more interesting in that the question is not whether someone else did it.
But whether she fell down the stairs herself.
Whether a murder happened or not. And so then it becomes this question of, you know,
like
trying
dueling
to sift
forensic evidence. Like,
and
was
all
that
of
a
that
punch
is
or was
complete
that
complete bullshit,
yeah.
Right? Particularly because, I mean, because there's no independent analysis,
mm-hmm.
right? The medical examiners work for the cops, right? Their job is to say whatever the cops think happened. And then the defense will, of course, get their own, you know, medicine men to come in and say, no, of course this couldn't have happened, right? Yeah. So, and I don't have any opinions on this actual case because I just watched a dramatization of it. So, of course, I don't know. But it's an excellent miniseries. Goes on a little too long. There's 8 episodes. It could have been 7 or 6, frankly.
Does the miniseries advance an agenda for whether he's innocent or guilty?
It's... takes very seriously all like both possibilities,
mm-hmm.
And in fact has some very chilling reenactments showing either side. So kind of leaves you guessing until I would say the final episode where it leans on he did it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's Colin.
How steep are these stairs are we talking about?
Let
me know about the stairs. I want to know more about the stairs.
Okay, yeah. It's like a back staircase.
To a second floor.
And so that's why he is charged initially, because the photos are very gruesome. She had additional lacerations, and there was some suggestion that there was injuries that would have come from strangulation. Again, this is disputed, but that's the cop's argument, and there was just a lot of blood, right?
Is it a nice house?
Yeah, so this is the
carpeting on the stairs?
No carpeting, not that I saw. This is the other suggestion, is he's a novelist, he's written some novels, a modicum of success, but she's the breadwinner, and he was also, flirting, engaging in some carnal relations with rent-a-boys. And so the police's narrative is...
Rent-a-boys, you say?
Yes. He's found out. The moneymaker is going to leave him, and he's addicted to the, lifestyle they have, and so he kills her in a fit of rage.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The things that I find beyond the physical evidence, which, and again, it's just a dramatization, so I have no idea about the actual case.
Mm-hmm.
The things that seem, how do you, usually someone doesn't commit a single violent act in their lives, right? That happens to be a grisly murder, right? Normally, if someone has done other past abuses, then it's much easier to believe that they could have committed a horrible crime.
Sure.
And this is the dramatization says, you know, he hit his kids. And there was also a suggestion that he killed someone else because a rumored lover of his was all another one was found at the bottom of a staircase.
Oh, well, okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I lean towards he did it. There's a whole, I don't want to, spoilers if you're going to watch this. I don't think it spoils too much, but if you want to go watch the whole miniseries, again, some great performances, really well done, a little too long. There's this other like Reddit theory about, cause she had neither the defense nor the prosecution could explain, the wife. She had a bunch of like cuts and lacerations on her head. And at first the prosecution thought, he used a hollow weapon, particularly a blow poke, kind of like fireplace implement to beat her. And they couldn't find the fire poke in the house. And so it's like, oh, he got rid of the murder weapon. Then they find the fire poke. And so it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's out. That didn't happen. So then how do you explain the cuts on her head? And the defense can't explain that either if she just fell. So there's this kind of Reddit theory where it's like, oh, she was attacked by an owl outside their house and then comes in and is disoriented walking up the stairs. She had a Valium, she trips and falls. Yeah, and so that explains everything. Yeah, this is what's there's a character in a real person. So this is another actually really interesting thing about the series. So it gets very meta in an interesting way, because during the actual case there was a French documentary team covering his trial, which then they then produced acclaimed documentary about it. And then, surprise, surprise, one of the female documentarians on this part of this team falls in love with the guy who goes to prison and then becomes an advocate for trying to get him out. And she becomes, it's actually kind of funny, because like at first she becomes sincerely convinced of this ridiculous owl theory. And then she becomes convinced of another, even less likely theory. And the documentary kind of plays it, because it's all about like, oh, you know, a crime is just the narrative you tell. So it plays it very straight of like making you feel like these things are convincing and true, even though they're all lies. Or at least just like ludicrous. There's a great scene where Sophie is her name. Gets mad at Michael, the convicted killer, for the fact that she got so obsessed with his case. She has kind of a meltdown about how she was obsessed with his case, and that's obviously his fault. Curious.
But that's my second favorite use of owls as a red herring. There's this famous like UFO rumor story case that it's one of the more harder to explain ones, where there was like a number of witnesses that all said similar things about they were hiding in their family home. It's a whole family, and they think there's aliens on their rooftop, or little silver men things, and the only attempt to explain it was like escaped owls that fell in a bucket of silver paint or something. Those owls, man. It's always owls. Owls are behind it all.
Always the owls. Okay. Yeah. We got a. What's going on with them?
I don't know.
I think it's the only bird that has the eyes in the front of the head.
And they do the whole.
Yeah, their necks can swivel.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, that feels good. My neck is so sore from bouldering.
What's going on there, buddy?
Feels really good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, want to look alive.
Anything else?
I don't know. Have you been consuming anything? Watched anything?
I watched the new Avatar the Last Airbender movie. They made
another live
sequel.
Action one.
They made a live action show, but they also made a anime cartoon movie thing that follows the original people, Aang and Zuko. Oh. It takes place like 5 years later.
They're
young adults now. It's in between that and The Legend of Korra. So it's showing the rise of the city. They're later in Republic City. And the animation was really good. It was pretty good. They used different voice actors, which bothered me slightly. It was fine to have a different voice actor for Aang, because Aang is like a really little kid, which is a very high voice, and now he's a young adult. So I would see having a different voice. But the guy who plays Zuko has such – it's Dante Basco has such a recognizable voice that to not have him felt weird. And they had to play him, I think, was Steven Yeun, who is he was from The Walking Dead, but he voiced a different character in like Legend of Korra. So it was, and he just sounds like him all the time. He doesn't sound like Zuko, but yeah. But I liked it. Okay. I would recommend it if you're big Avatar fans. It was the animation was pretty and the story held up. It was a bit like just action, which is the way I feel like a lot of things are now. And you know, we gotta. What's wrong with having your characters stop and like solve a puzzle every now and then, or like an obstacle that requires just sitting and thinking? You know what I mean?
I love nothing more than a scene of people sitting in a room talking. Yeah,
that's what we want.
That's really what we want.
Sit and talk more. Yeah. Beautiful. Ooh, yeah. Good stuff. All right. I'll have some more thoughts on something else. I lost my train of thought. In the future. So let's wrap it up there.
Okay, very good.
All right, we'll see y'all next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for watching.